If you lose a sale or they didn't go with you, it's critical that you find out the real reason why. And sometimes it's really difficult to get that. And if it's a personality conflict, if they say, Patrick, you just came on too strong, so we didn't like you. That's pretty tough. My ego can only take so much, but at the same time, it's really helpful for me to understand that. I'm thinking like, okay, maybe I had something going on that day. Maybe it was just me, or maybe I was that way. And those are introspective things that's super important for us to understand, because we certainly don't want to take that into the next call, right? And we want to learn from our mistakes. And remember, it's a mistake. So we can do it again and do it again and then get better at it. If you're failing at something, there's usually a reason behind it. Like the question behind the question, there's usually a reason why someone's not buying it. And it's my job to figure out what that is.
Albert Einstein said, "Don't think about why you question, simply don't stop questioning." Welcome to Curated Questions. I am your host, Ken Woodward. And these questions are not mathematical equations, but rather a resource to encounter personal reflection and growth. As Tupac Shakur stated, even the genius asks questions. Now, let's engage the questioning community.
Greetings, Ken Woodward here. Welcome back to another episode of Curated Questions. Together, we engage inquisitive humans about how they use questions to navigate and make sense of our world. I am a fellow traveler and a pilgrim on this journey, and I'm glad you are here. Today's conversation is with Patrick Dubois. Patrick has over 30 years of corporate sales and leadership experience in the veterinary and pet spaces. In 2024, he launched his own consultancy, Sales Growth Today, as a conduit to share his experience through coaching, seminars, workshops, and strength assessments. He specializes in optimizing sales strategies with a three-step plan that is quantifiable, actionable, and achievable. In July of 2024, he and his wife realized a 30-year dream with the formal opening of Stellar Ridge Vineyard in Newcastle, California, and quickly received a score of 92 from wine enthusiasts on their 2023 GSM Rosé. With Patrick's professional background, his realization of personal dreams, and a core principle of striving to become the person your dog thinks you are, I'm confident this will be a great conversation. Patrick, welcome to Curated Questions.
Great to be here, Ken. Great intro. I love it.
Excellent. I like to start these conversations with the question of asking folks, where did they first understand the power of questions?
Yeah, I think when I'll tell a story is great. Well, I was in maybe my junior or senior year of college. I took what I considered an easy A course, which was an acting class or acting 101. And one of the fun things we did, it's more of a game or an exercise, is you jump on stage and there's someone in front of you. And the only thing you can do is ask them a question, and they ask you a question. And as soon as you don't ask them a question back, you're off the stage, and the next person jumps up, and so the game begins. And so probably not what you're expecting, but I thought it was so fun to be up there and really stay focused on not answering their question, but asking a question back. And you can change the subject or the temperament or the, or, you know, however you wanted to, just by asking different questions back and forth. And I ended up doing very well at that. And it was a common theme anyway, when she would do this example, that I would be usually the last person standing, because I excelled at it. It was so much fun. Fast forward to the business environment, questions have become so important, and the way you ask them, how you ask them, you know, where you're going with the questions, right? So I just love this environment. I love the theme of your show, and I'm looking forward to answering some of your questions too.
That is an interesting game that your teacher had you play, just so I can understand, because perhaps I want to use this at some point. In this, you're just asking questions back and forth, or is it you're answering and also?
You're just asking questions back. So if you ask me a question, I ask you a question. You ask me a question, I ask you a question. And that's how the conversation goes.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Had never heard of that one.
If you go to Whose Line Is It Anyway, I think they play a version of that on some of their videos or the TV show. I've seen that before on them too. So yeah, it's a great exercise. it teaches you a lot of things. And her instruction is basically how to stay in the moment and really focus and really not get tripped up by it. Much like improv, I would think, same idea.
Hmm. Do you have any idea why you were able to be so good or why you did well at that? Kind of what, you know, what was the foundation for you to be able to succeed doing that?
I just found it to be really intriguing and I wasn't going to lose. So I was very competitive in one sense, but I also understood the game. And you really had to not get tripped up by someone else's way of saying things, because you can ask a question like it's an assumed question. Like, are you sure? You know, and you end up with a higher pitch tone. And that is a question. If you say, are you sure? You know, anyway, she would be judge and jury right then. So pretty soon you learn like what you could get away with. If you're stuck, you're like, oh, I don't know how to answer that. And then, you know, if you pause too long, you're out. So I said, it's brutal, but at the same time, it's so much fun. I really enjoyed it.
That's a good exercise, I'm thinking. Yeah. Just
at a minimum. You should try it.
Yes. At a minimum, I am going to try it just to give it a go and to see how that works. Now, I know that you've done most of your professional work in sales. And so I wanted to be able to spend some time unpacking that and learning, because I know questions are a big part of sales, or they should be a big part of sales if you're going to be effective. So what was some of your journey in the progression in the world of sales, but then through that lens of questions? Maybe where did you get some of your early sales training? What did that look like? And then how did you develop some of your own technique as you went through your career?
Yeah. When I was in college, I wanted to be a veterinarian. That was the goal. And then about my junior year, I decided that that wasn't going to be my path. I did a lot of externships and internships with lots of different animal, from equine, bovine, you know, everything, thinking like, oh, I wanted to be a large animal specialist then. So when I decided to make the change, I love science. I love the understanding how things work. And that's just how my brain is. And so I didn't know what to do with all this knowledge, but I love the animal industry. So I decided to take a leap and go into sales. And when I got my first opportunity, it was 100% commission role, and it's through distribution. So I had, you know, 10,000 products to sell, and I wasn't given any training like at all. It was basically, here's your book of business. They're already buying from you. This is all the products we carry. You know, this is the size of your territory, and, you know, go get them, Tiger. And so I love that story so much, because there's so many people who experienced that, where they didn't get any training. They were just either naturally good at it, or someone thought they would be good at it. And then they get into it and think like, holy cow, I don't know anything about anything in here. So I didn't have any training for, you know, probably at least three years. And I just learned, because I'm from the animal industry, I worked at a veterinary hospital. I kind of knew the ins and outs of going into that. And so I was comfortable in that environment. What I didn't know was all the names of the drugs, how to spell them, because back in those days we had to write it out. And, you know, that was the days of going to the payphone and calling in my order, and, you know, we get into that part. So I didn't have much training at all. I just learned what I knew, what helped me. And I was just also very curious as a person. So I asked a lot of questions, and I learned that over time, that the more I got into really good questions, I got really better results. So it's kind of like, oh, just do that more then, Patrick. That makes sense to me. Mm. And then after a while, I changed jobs, got into some more of a corporate environments, less less commission-based, more of a salary-based positions. And then we started to get some training from folks who came in and started to help us learn their system, like spin selling and those type of things came in. I started to learn a little bit more about the fundamentals of selling from that standpoint.
What was it about the veterinary aspect of things that you're like, now this probably isn't my direction to go the full on veterinary side, but clearly, as you stated, you enjoy working in and around and supporting animals. But what was one of those factors or the situation that drove you off of that primary track?
There were several, Ken. And I think the biggest one was another 4 years of college. It was a little daunting for me. Mm-hmm. I had entered the college a little bit later in life because I had a couple other careers before I went to college. So that's a whole nother probably story. But by the time I went to college, I was ready to be educated. I thought that would be my path to go into veterinary because I liked it so much. So one was, it's another time commitment. And I didn't know if I could do that either financially or honestly, mm-hmm. if I had the time to do it. It was very difficult to get into the school, so I didn't have the greatest of grades. So I knew I'd have to take either, I would have to go out of state into some other colleges, and I didn't really want to do that. And then talking with the veterinarians for at least 2 years of doing internships with them, really poking holes and asking lots of questions, which I talked about earlier, I realized that it's probably not going to be a good match because of some of the temperament and some of the challenges they have. And I really like horses, and I really thought that would be a really fun area to go into because I really connected well with them. And I had a lot of accolades saying that you'd be really good at it and so forth. But they said, you're not going to make much money. Realize that. And it's very hard work and it's crazy hours. And I had dreams of like James Harriet and all that kind of stuff. And I realized that may not be the right avenue to go down to. But I did know that sales was an opportunity and you can make lots of money that way. And I had a lot of really good knowledge. So I started to kind of put feelers out with the different representatives and just started asking questions like, hey, you're in the animal world, you know, what is it like being a rep and what are the challenges and so forth? And all I needed was just a break because I didn't have any experience. They're like, they weren't going to touch me because I didn't have any sales experience. But I got on with a small distributor and the rest was history. I really loved it. The nice thing, Ken, is I got a chance to be around all of it and then talk to veterinarians because I knew what they went through and what it was like, and I could still be part of it, but not be a veterinarian. And I had so much more freedom, obviously, which was another big part of what my values were. I really wanted freedom to do lots more things than to just be a vet in one sense. So.
I met someone the other day. We were talking a little bit about the world of being a vet, and she works at a college, part of the entrance process. And she was just like, it is crazy at how many people want to be a vet. And then the barriers that are in place, as you said, there's a cost is a significant one because it's animals, not humans. That means that there's far less financial resources to come to bear to be able to help out and the like. And then on the back end, although there's a bunch of animals out there, the ability to build a practice and go through the up and down of just most of the animals that come in are sick or have some kind of a problem and being able to emotionally process that. I was like, and she mentioned all those things. I was like, I had no idea that there's all these other factors that are going to potentially derail anyone going into that field. So appreciate the vets for who they are, but yeah, there's a lot to juggle there.
Yeah. And remember this, the animals cannot talk, at least in our language. So the veterinarians have to figure it out without that. And animals are very good at being stoic. They're not going to show, you know, their pain or where they're having problems. So yeah, they have that as well. But yeah, good. Yeah, good information for sure to understand their industry, what their challenges are. And even today, they have so many more challenges than they did back when I was considering going into the practice. So my heart and my hat go off to both of them.
What were some of those early lessons that you learned as you were earning your stripes as a sales person without all the training? Was curiosity your primary asset that you carried in with you to each of those conversations?
Yeah, I mean, I have a natural ability. I didn't learn this till later what they were, but I just trusted myself and trusted my instincts. So I have a natural ability to really look at situations and understand them from a 30,000 foot level. But also when we're talking to humans, and I don't know how it got it, but whatever you believe in, whether it's God-given talent or it's just your superpower, and that's what I coach to now. This is my superpower. I'm able to usually bond with a person pretty fast because I can figure them out from a maybe a strength standpoint. Like, what are they really good at? And so I can get on their wavelength pretty fast. And I'm able to do a little morphing myself to match them. And part of sales training, I look back on it, is it's our job to really match the customer's energy or what they're giving us versus us pushing through our agenda and saying, this is who I am and this is how it's going to be. And I figured that out pretty early and was able to take some really difficult customers and quote unquote, turn them around or get the business in one sense. And I was just like, wow, okay, I see how this works. I see how this works. If I, like I said, if I do this, then I get rewarded for it. And it was really just that. And I just started to be really intelligent about what that means, how it looks. I didn't get it always right. I mean, I learned from my mistakes, as we all do, pretty early on as well, because I coach this now. But if you have someone in front of you as a customer and there's something off between you, you're not connecting, and you're thinking, God, this person's a jerk, or they're this, or they're that, and you want to just push the eject button and say, I'm out. It's really challenging for salespeople to really pull back and go, nope, this is a customer. This, and it may be a good customer that's already purchasing from you. And you have to really lean into that and explore it. And that's a really hard lesson to learn, because most of us are like, I don't get it. But if you understand, like, they just have different values than you, because you don't value the same thing they do. And because you're the salesperson, you have to kind of change a little bit to match that. It doesn't mean you have to sell your soul necessarily, but for this particular customer, you have to pull back a little bit and go, okay, they're coming from a place of this and I'm not, and I don't like that. So how do I just remove myself from that equation and say, like, hey, let them be who they want? I mean, no skin off my nose if they want to do it that way. They're a customer, and don't take it personally. I didn't learn that until, geez, dude, like years later. But I knew that initially going into it, I could try that. And sometimes I did well, and I had lots of stories where it didn't. I was like, nope, I don't like this person. I don't like how they treat me. So in one sense, you have to be protective. You can't take a beating and then walk out of the thing like, well, that's just sales. No, I mean, if it gets to a personal level, or they really start, you know, berating you, or, you know, I mean, there is a limit, obviously, that we could do as salespeople. So I coach with that too, is that if you see that comment, then you can remove yourself from the situation and say, listen, you don't have the right to treat me that way, you know, and so let's talk about this. There is a humanity between us that I think is important for people to understand. So I don't want to say, like, you know, stick with it, because that's not accurate, nor is that should be accurate. But I do think that if you're stuck, for example, if you and I are talking and you're not buying for what I'm selling, you know, we can kind of come back to the rewind machine and go, hey, so what was it, you know, Ken, that when we first started talking that you're excited, but now you're not, you know? So I can ask some of those questions now because I'm pretty confident in myself. But I think if you're navigating some of that early learnings, for me, was so important to have success, and then to not have success and realize, huh. Then later on, I was able to then start being a trainer and then train other people what I do. It's like the next level. One thing, you can do it, but the next thing, can you teach someone else to do it? And I think that's when I learned a lot of my lessons with coaching, for sure, but then how to ask questions and how to teach people what I do. Not everybody has that skill, but it was really fun for me, and I leaned into it, and I've had success with that too.
Hmm. In that scenario where you're not quite clicking and you do that pause button and the, hey, what did happen there? What are ways for success, if you will, for embracing the discomfort, let's say, and being able to go into that? So maybe, like, what is the self-talk? Or what is a scenario that you need to run through in your head to go, okay, I need to jump into this mode, this investigative mode versus sales mode? How does that work?
Lots of good examples come to my brain when you tell me that. But my coaching is always, if you start picking up on it right away, then my advice is to automatically go, okay, identify it. If you're meeting with a customer and you're not getting along, or there's some friction or something's going on, take a step back and go, okay, I've got to go into curious mode. And I want to emphasize curious. There's no ego involved. There's no waiting to I gotcha involved. There's nothing like that. You're just being curious. So I always tell people, pretend you're a 2-year-old or 3, whichever you want to pick in there, and that you're just asking questions. Now, you have to be careful because most of us get tired of a 2-year-old asking like a zillion questions, like, why is the sky blue? And you tell them, right? So you have to be careful. But if you just get in the curious mode and don't put anything on it, and this becomes the game we talked about earlier about asking questions and really staying focused on what their answer is. So if you immediately feel like, oh, this is just not going well, step back and go into curious mode and start asking some questions that are very basic. For example, hey, I noticed when they came in, I kind of felt like there was something else going on today that maybe we need to talk about first. And something like that. It's very bland, very basic. It gives them a chance to say, you're right, Patrick, I don't know, let's just keep in the animal world for now. I've had 3 euthanasias this morning, and my staff is upset. You know, we're not doing well, you know, and all this stuff. And immediately, whatever my agenda is coming in is now should be gone, because it's not a time for me to press what my, you know, what I'm going there to sell in. So it could be something like that. It could be something where the person is really anxious and is shut down. And so you're not getting anything from me. You're thinking like, gosh, I'm asking these questions. They're thinking, So they're obviously distracted by something else. So one thing I always coach is just pull back and say, hey, you know, is this still a good time for us to talk? And leave it out there. And those are tough. I mean, it's easier said than done, because sometimes when you're in the middle of it, dude, it's hard to be introspective and really kind of pull back a little bit, because you're thinking like, hey, I have a job to do. I have a quota to make. You know, this is a good account, or this is an account I want, or, you know, whatever it is. And sometimes you can't, because we're also in the people business and sales. So the talk track that I think in myself is, Patrick, be curious. Now's not the time to push your agenda. Let's ask some really good questions. And that comes into play with, okay, what kinds of questions should we ask right now? And I want to strip away as much as I can any of the pressure of sales in these questions. So this is not like, you know, anything regarding the product or the services you're selling. It's about the person in front of you or the environment you're in, whether you're an electrician, you know, or a coffee shop, you know, you're in a tree business or whatever it is. You can pull back and say, hey, what's that customer going through right now that I need to find out what that is? Or this is not going to go well, or it's not going to go any further. And they're going to say, not today. And I'm going to wonder like, oh, you know, what did I do? So the questions at that point have to be very basic.
What do you think that most folks might misunderstand about sales?
One guy told me, he's like, it's like a knife fight, Patrick. You know, we both have knives and someone's going to die. I'm thinking like, oh my God, that is not sales. So we can actually do like, you know, what is not sales? It's really more of a, it's just, you know, there should be a good flow back and forth with each other. It's really, you know, I'm a salesperson, so I have a product or a service I'm selling. I have a solution and they have a potential need for my solution. And it really should be as simple as that. Like, hey, you know, can I ask you questions about what you need? Sure. I need this, this, this. Okay, great. Well, these are my solutions and I have this, this, this. And they go, no, I don't like any of those. And you go, well, I thought you said, you know, this is the problem. Like, no, I really wanted this. And so this becomes like this back and forth until you kind of finally get it down to what is their need or what is their challenge? And here's the solution that I have. And it may not be the one that they want or need necessarily, but if I've done my homework, I've done my pre-call planning, all that, I'm pretty darn sure they need me. It's just my job now to figure that part out. So I think people get sales wrong, that it has to be this battle or it's so much intensity on it. And I get it, because there's both sides of the story. People have really big challenges with closing. Like, oh my God, I really suck at closing because I get so anxious about it. I laugh at that because I'm thinking, gosh, that's the kind of the funnest part. So I think you may be putting a lot of pressure on yourself to have that close. I said, because if you're closing to this, you know, big, huge thing, then you may not have done enough work in the beginning, because you, it should be a natural close where they're thinking like, that sounds good, Patrick, without me saying, hey, Ken, would you like to buy my product or my services? You do have to do that. And I certainly do that myself, because I have to sell myself and I sell my wine. So I'm thinking I have to ask for the business for sure.
Yeah.
I think that's a misconception, though. And the other thing I would say, Ken, is that if you're a buyer and you're responsible for purchasing product, you want your salespeople to close you. And I think that's another missed opportunity, is that salespeople don't go in saying like, listen, they're expecting you to close. And if you don't close, they're going to say, well, why should I give you my business? You're not even asking for it. So you have to ask for the business. So there's two sides of that, I guess.
That's a great point or insight, is because most of the time I only think about it from the sales rep perspective. But if I have buyers, yes, they are looking for product or they're looking for a solution. Okay, so where is that coming from? And hopefully it's the inbound sales reps. You're looking to provide a service or whatever it is, or solve a problem. Are there any particular sales elements that are unique within the veterinary and pet industry that you think may translate over or might be undiscovered solutions or aspects of things in other areas of sales that, that you've encountered in your field?
Yeah, you know, I think understanding the veterinary industry overall is definitely a skill set that I have. When it comes to sales, there really is not a, I mean, it's industry specific in one sense, because you do have a product or service that you can talk about, and you can do the, you know, features and benefits of that. But in general speaking, and I've met with lots of people, I have different types of clients. They're not from the animal industry. Sales is sales. So there's fundamentals of sales that I think, you know, there's definitely things we can highlight. I can talk about that. But from an animal standpoint, or, you know, what it is, medical is the same thing. A dentist is the same. You have a product that's going to help a patient. So if you want to look at it from that angle, there's definitely some questions you can ask around that. I think that would be perhaps in line from a medical standpoint versus a service or a widget or something for a household, or, you know, whatever you want to think of. Services are different questions, I think, in my mind, than product. I think there's a different way around it, but in the end, the fundamentals of sales is still the same. There has to be, you know, I teach like the sales cycles. You can look those up. Everyone has their own dynamics of it. I have found there to be really strong indications that there's 8 stages of a sales always going on all the time. And you can be in stage 4 in one person. You can be at the 7th in another, and a 1 at somebody else. So there's always this constant movement within the sales cycle. So I think overall, my experience has been sales is sales. And what people talk about, you can read 1,000, 10,000 books that are out there on sales. Everyone has their own opinion about what it is and what it should be, which is great, because I think it's so important. Mm.
Are there any particular resources that you would point somebody that's new starting up? To your point, if I walk into the Barnes and Noble, right, there's going to be 75 books on sales, and some of the good ones are probably not on the shelf. But any particular resources you would say, hey, here's something to start with if you're just doing it Lone Ranger style?
Yeah, there's so many. I think the first thing people should really do, if you really want to get down to it, is to understand who you are first before you do anything else. And there's a couple psychological tests you can take. I'm talking about DISC, Myers-Briggs. There's many of them that you can use. I personally like StrengthFinders, because I think it dials down exactly what your strengths are. And that's what I coach to. That's what I push people towards, because I think that's our own superpower. And everybody has their own strengths. And I get so frustrated with people always saying, well, I don't have this and I don't have that. And I want to say, well, listen, dude, you have this. and you have this in spades, and you're really good at this. So let's do that more. And they go, They go, wow, I've never had someone talk to me that way. I go, well, you contacted me and you're paying me to help you. This is a couple of first steps. So that's what I tell people is get the StrengthFinders book and take that test. It's pretty simple. And then you're going to get your top five strengths. And then from there, really study that first strength that you have and start practicing that strength. So for example, mine is a maximizer, and they use different words. It doesn't really matter necessarily. But if you understand what a maximizer is and can do for people, it's amazing. And people go, wow, that's so cool. I didn't realize that that was my strength. And sometimes that's a light bulb for people. And they go, and that's enough. They go, great. I'll take it from here. Perfect. Because I want them to succeed. And if you are doing some research and reading and stuff, that would be my number one. Because if you don't know who you are, no matter how many books you read or how many people you talk to, you're still going to struggle. And you could be in a really successful job because you're earning a paycheck, but you're miserable. Then you're not really matching, who you are, what your job is and all that. And I'm not a career counselor or coach from that standpoint. I can really talk about it. But I definitely think that StrengthFinders is the book to get first and foremost. And if you're not comfortable with having that book, my other suggestion is to go to your family and your friends and ask them, okay, what are things that I do really well that maybe I don't know about or that I should know about? And then write those down and continue to ask as many friends and families who will tell you, because we all will, because we're really good at supporting each other that way. And then take those results, whether you get it from the book or from your family and friends, and write them all up and narrow it down to your top five. And then I always re-ask those same people. I go, okay, here's what I found as my top five strengths. What do you think? And they go, no, you should really put this in there because I think that's, you're super funny all the time. You should put humor in there, whatever they say. And that's sure. It. And now you have your who you are. And from there, you definitely can start branching out to other things. I have some resources that I boiled down that's helped me on my website. So salesgrowthtoday.com. If you go to the resource tab, I have plenty of information there that I have used that's helped me. So I've been very strict about what I put there as my resources because I can speak to each one of those. And I'm sure you may know it already, but the QBQ, the question behind the question, is one of my favorites because it really dials into, someone throws out a ball as a question to you. And then now, like I said, it's so funny we talk about this. The game begins with the question because my goal then is to figure out, like, why did you ask that question? There has to be something behind it. And so he talks about that quite a bit on how to find that out and what things you can do and say. It's a terrific book. You can use it as a book club with your team. If you're managing a team, you could use it with your family and friends if they're really into that kind of stuff. You can teach it to other organizations or key accounts. To their leaderships, there's lots of ways you can use QBQ.
Excellent. Looking at your resource page, that was the first time seeing that book, and it's supposed to arrive tomorrow. So I will be diving into that one.
It's going to be right next to your collection in the background. That's awesome.
Yeah, I got my section of question books right up here on this side. I'll be adding to that collection. You had mentioned in the StrengthFinder piece, what are some of the things that folks should think about when they're going through this process regarding, I want to be different than this, or I want to be different than what I'm finding out?
I know.
I have a history of that. I've tried to be a lot of people that I'm not.
Yeah.
And so that embracing who we are, what does that process actually look like in being comfortable? Or discovering and then being comfortable with those, whatever the strengths are.
It's so great you bring that up. I love it. Good job for you to ask those questions and have this conversation with people because I think we need it more. It is so much fun to really find out who you are because you think you're this or you've been told that and you want to be something else, as you mentioned earlier. And I think it's okay. I mean, I know it's okay to be who you are. because you have so much to give to the world and you can do so many things once you find out who you are that you never thought you could ever do. And one of my favorite moments, even when I was managing a team, and even with working with clients now, is when we go through this exercise and they go to their number one strength and I have them read it. And then we talk about some of the things they can use it under. And in Strength Finders, there's a couple different ways that you can talk about your strength and examples of where you're good at it. And then we start talking about real world scenarios with this strength in mind. And the best part for me, the dopamine hit for me, is when the light bulb goes off and they go, wow, that is so me. And I think that's when we start to celebrate. Because I think it's important for lots of reasons. When you have confidence with who you are, you can walk into any room, take any environment. If you are locked down cold with who you are, man, ain't nobody can push you off your pedestal or whatever you want to, what analogy you want to use, because you're pretty solid and you won't waver if you really believe it. If you really think like, yeah, I'm good at it. And then the cool part is, and then if you've never been told this before, and then you go out and you start practicing it and you get all these opportunities. You're thinking like, shoot, where have you guys been? I've been out here slugging it out. And all of a sudden I'm getting like, you know, all these phone calls or all these things to think, hey, I want to be on his team, or I want to have his product or his services or, you know, whatever it is. You're thinking, shoot. So I think that's part of it, Ken, is that when people realize that's the nirvana that I love. And I love being there when people find that experience, because their face, their life, everything is going to change significantly. And then you can keep going. There's four more other strengths that you really can understand. So if you understand your top five strengths and how that it's helpful for you, it really helps, at least in my brain. It goes, ah, that makes a lot of sense, Patrick. I'm a futuristic kind of guy. I love the future. I love science fiction. I love all that stuff. And so anytime new technology comes out, I'm so into it, right? Some people give me shit about it. I'm thinking like, yeah, whatever. But I love that stuff. And so I'm really comfortable with understanding or trying to understand, like, what does it do? How does it do it? AI fascinates me for lots of different reasons. So I love that stuff. And so for me, I just feel comfortable in it. And it gives me so much more pleasure that I'm giving myself the freedom to love that, because it's one of my strengths. Does that make sense?
It does. And that's an amazing statement. The freedom to give yourself to love it. And there's probably elements of, as I think back on my experience of trying to be someone that I'm not, and those moments are recognizing that's not me over here. I'm not that guy. That's fine. But to turn towards whatever those strengths are and to really embrace it and say, okay, yes, we're in this together, you know, through this thing that we call life, and this strength is here. That to me seems like a powerful moment, is to fully look at it, look at that strength with love and fully embrace. I could see how that would be a very powerful, life-changing moment.
Yeah. And it's so easy because we already have it. You're not trying to go find it. You don't have to go take a class or pay so much money. It's already there. And it just takes us and our brain to get the other shit out of the way and let us be who we really are, and then totally sit in it and think, yeah. And it does suck sometimes. You're thinking like, dang it, I wanted to be a tiger. But now I'm a llama. And what the hell? I don't want to be a llama, right? Or whatever. And then you can sit back and go, well, what's cool about a llama? And then what do llamas do? Whatever. I'm just an example, but it is important that people understand, like, you know, I've had people want to be performers. They want to be rock stars. They want to be singers. And they take all these acting lessons or the voice lessons, and they do all these things. And they're just, you know, and it's important because from a career standpoint, it is hard to say, well, Patrick, my values are this, my strengths are this, that I should be good at this in this particular job. And that's harder to do because sometimes that job doesn't allow you to do all your strengths. It may allow you to do some. And that's what I had found, that some of my strengths were really good, and some of the jobs I had really limited me on my strengths. So I had to make some tough decisions. And part of going out on my own as a career coach was just that, that I really wanted more freedom to really help more people than I was doing at my corporate job. So that's a part of me that had to change. And yeah, dude, it scares the hell out of me most of the time, but it's so much fun as well. So you kind of have to balance it. You know?
What questions do you think are underutilized?
I think in a business standpoint, putting yourself in the customer's position. So I coach to this quite a bit. Is when you're walking into a business, remember that this is their business. This is their livelihood. This is what they do. You're a rep, or you're maybe a customer, but you're walking into what, you know, this is their environment, especially if you're talking to the owner. So one form of questions that I like to ask them is, if you can get to it, what are some of the major challenges that this owner is facing? And it may have nothing to do with your product or service, but you want to provide them a way to tell you that answer in a way that's coming from a good place, because you're not setting them up with, kind of a bait and switch kind of idea. You really want to come from a place of authenticity and saying, hey, I really want to understand your business. And, you know, what are your challenges? So be prepared. They may say payroll. They may say I had to fire someone, and nothing to do with your product or services. But that's okay, because most of the time, sales reps, and I'm being general here, don't really care about the business. They care about placing their product and moving on to the next sale. So I don't know if it's underutilized, but it's certainly something that I preach quite a bit is, you know, you're walking into their business. So imagine if you were walking into your business, so place yourself in their shoes, what would you want the rep to ask you? And that's a fun question, because it does position them in a different place. And I always tell them, hey, listen, you're going to get to your products eventually. I mean, because that's the goal of the call. And it may not be the way you thought. The path you thought walking in the door may be like, well, I've researched it. They don't use this product or service. So I'm going to do features and benefit on mine and ask them, you know, if they're happy with the product, whatever it is. And it may be you're going to get to that, but just not the way you think you're going to get to it. I don't know if it's the biggest, but that's an underutilized one that I've seen quite a bit.
How can questions help identify and remove barriers? So if we talk about those barriers, so whether it's walking into the business or individuals, you know, walking through their life and needing coaching, what are your thoughts about the barriers?
Yeah. Man, there's a lot. That's a oof. I have a lot of energy around this one, because I think it's important that people have a theme to their question, so they know where their questions want to lead them. Your questions can actually drive the sales call where you want it to go. And it's not as if we're manipulating the other person. We're just being curious, but we have a clear path with what the questions are. So question one could be pretty basic to kind of get things rolling with, hey, so tell me about some of the challenges you're facing with XYZ, or your services, or what are you challenging facing here at this establishment, whatever it is. And then from there, you want to really listen to where their energy is at, and then kind of go where that energy goes. And it's hard, because you're thinking like, geez, dude, you're going to take me off my game. It's not where I want to go. And I always tell them, I said, yep, that is a risk, but the reward is significant, because you want to be different than the last 10 reps that have walked through the door about this. You want to be different. And so this is a difference maker. You really have care and concern about your questions. So they have to be a theme, to my opinion, with where you want to go, and then help drive the conversation eventually to your product or services by asking really specific questions about it. And if the customer says, hey, Patrick, you know, today's not a really good day because we've had, you know, XYZ, if I said earlier, like the euthanasias, and that's totally fine. You really want to also live to fight another day. And so you could say something like, hey, I understand this is a tough day, and I do have a route, or I do have a schedule, or I block my time or whatever it is, but I'd love to come back in and revisit this. So the question could be, is there a better time today or is there a better time next week? That question really sets you up for the next time in. So questions are really important to ask in the right phrasing and the right terminology. If you, you know, drill down someone with your product detail questions or your services questions, most of us are out. Because I'm thinking like, listen, dude, obviously I see you coming with your questions. So you have to be careful that you don't telegraph where you're going with those questions, because most of us figure it out. You're not being authentic with your questions. You're using loaded questions, we call that, to get what you want. And it's a hard one to not do loaded questions because you have a product or services you want to sell. But I think you can do it in a way that's legitimate and honest, but you have to find out first what the customer's needs are first, and not have them loaded with like a gotcha question.
What has been your experience with getting to the end of that and recognizing, okay, you're not the best product, or you can't deliver the best solution, and then just establishing the relationship? And then 2 years later, 5 years later, they give you a call back. I'm assuming that by having a conversation, getting to the end of it, or asking the genuine questions out of curiosity, trying to understand what their pain points are, and then getting to the end and it's like, okay, yeah, our solution isn't the best one for you, but leaving it there and then coming back around at some, but you know, another year after your product now has the right gizmos, capabilities coming back, I'm assuming that that sets you up in playing the long game that way for a much better opportunity next time around.
Yeah, your assumption is correct. And I don't even know it has to be that long a time, because one thing to remember is that it's a common phrasing, but no doesn't mean no. It just means not now or not yet. And you could be the third or fourth person that's come in and talk about this need this person has. And so they're evaluating how you handled it, what you're like, all that. And honestly, Ken, people buy from people they like. So the question always asked me is like, well, Patrick, how do I be more likable? And I go, well, then just be yourself, just be authentic. And the odds are for you if you're being authentic, because not everybody likes me, right? You've had this, not everyone likes you, and that's okay. But chances are good that if you're being someone you're not, then they don't really know who you are. And you want to say, hey, wait, that's not who I am. And they go, well, then who are you? And well, let me start over. So don't start over. Just go in with being, you know, who you are. And I always say, listen, if it's not a match from a product, services, or personality, that's totally understandable. But you have got to figure that out, because the last thing I want to do is leave a sales call or sales environment, or for me, from a wine standpoint, if I'm trying to sell my wine and they're saying no, I want to understand why. And I don't want the usual questions or the usual answers. I really want to understand that. And so if I can get to a relationship standpoint with that buyer and say, hey, so what was it exactly that prevented you from buying from me or using my product or my services? And really be vulnerable and then just curious, not puffing your chest or not positioning your body in such a way that it's threatening, because we do that. If you can get that feedback and they say, hey, Patrick, I'll give an example from a wine. We just have too much rosé right now, for example, and we just can't move it. And so we're stuck with a lot of inventory. And now that information is super helpful for me.
Yeah.
Because now I can come back and say, hey, I totally understand that. And if I was in your shoes, I'd be thinking like, dude, that's the last thing I want to do is bring in more wine. But let me ask you a couple more questions. And so I go into very specific on, like, for example, what is your turn rate on that bottle? What has your profitability been so far? I mean, because honestly, Ken, if your rosé is not good, not your style, and you're having trouble moving it because people don't like it, then that's on you, because you bought a product that's not good. So as the sales rep, or as the owner, in my case, I can really talk to them about that and say, hey, I understand that. But if you had something that they really liked, think about the profit and stuff, and you wouldn't have to be sitting on something that's not moving because you're thinking my rosé doesn't sell, or you're assuming that mine won't either. And that's not true, because I have proof and I can give you some examples. I would have never gotten to that answer from them if I had been curious about what's really going on here. So if you lose a sale or they didn't go with you, it's critical that you find out the real reason why. And sometimes it's really difficult to get that. And if it's a personality conflict, if they say, Patrick, you just came on too strong, so we didn't like you. That's pretty tough. I mean, you know, my ego can only take so much, but at the same time, it's really helpful for me to understand that. I'm thinking like, okay, maybe I had something going on that day. Maybe it was just me, or maybe I was that way. And those are introspective things that's super important for us to understand, because we certainly don't want to take that into the next call, right? And we want to learn from our mistakes. And remember, it's a mistake. So we can do it again and do it again and then get better at it. If you're failing at something, there's usually a reason behind it. Like the question behind the question, there's usually a reason why someone's not buying it. And it's my job to figure out what that is. And I may not like the answer, but I take it upon myself to really ask that question. So when I get rejections now, well, you know, I have to coach myself and say, hey, Patrick, you got to, you know, practice what you preach. I think, oh my God, I got to go back in there. Yes, you do. So I march back in there and I think, hey, John, I know we had this conversation. I know you just saw me, but I got to ask this question and do it. And I'm telling you, some of those lasting impressions that I made, and they go, wow, I'm amazed you came back in here. And then I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I'm amazed I'm in here too, but I'm coaching myself to be here. And then they tell you. And then from there, it's really on. Then it's honest, dude. Now we're talking like they're just being honest. I'm being honest. I'm embarrassed. They're like, they've never had this happen before either. And so it's a really great moment. And it can be. And I think that's when we start dealing with the currency of humans.
Is there a, not necessarily magic number, but is there a good baseline number of questions you should expect to ask to be able to get down to a real answer? I mean, just as a ballpark, does it mean, okay, once we get past the pleasantries and really start talking, is it, all right, I probably need to drive 8 or 10 questions deep. Is that a fair number?
Yeah, it's too hard to, it's too hard to figure that out, because you have different personalities. Okay. So let's say from a DISC standpoint, I'm an ID. And so I can do chitty chatty for a while, but if I'm not in the mood, I'm a driver. Listen, Patrick, I don't want to know about your family, your stories and stuff. What are you here for? Right. You got to get down to it. So it's the old Tootsie Pop, you know, you have one or two questions to get to the center of it. Right. So for those type of personalities, do not waste their time. Get down to it. And I coach this quite a bit, is when you walk in the door, tell them you're a sales rep. You know, tell them what you're here to do and why you're here to do it. And if you get like, oh, they're back to a DISC, if they're an S or a C, they're very cautious, or they're very, you know, they may be overwhelmed by you coming in so strong, then you can pull back a little bit and say, oh, okay. And there's some ways to do that when you first walk in and see someone and how they're dressed. There's a really cool test you can do on that, is like you can figure out somewhat their personality style with how they're dressed. And to me, that's always good visuals to when I walk in and go, oh, they have a really loud tie on. So that's a pretty good indication they're an I from a DISC. So they're going to really have a lot of energy. They're going to want to sell the sizzle. They want to see all the features, benefits. They want to like, ooh, this is so cool. And so as an I kind of relate obviously to them. But if they're dressed, very conservative, or they don't shake your hand, or their handshake is kind of weak, you know, there's some things you can figure out. Think, okay, they're not a driver. They're not an I. They're usually an introvert of some form. So they're going to want this information really slow. So I tell myself, okay, check yourself, Patrick, go slow, match their energy, because it's super important for them to match it. If you overwhelm them, they're done. And it's really difficult to get them back. Even if you ask some of the Jedi mind trick questions I ask, it's hard to get them back, because they're looking at you like, you're overwhelming me already. You have too many questions, Patrick. I think you're like, shoot, I just blew it. Yeah.
All right. So I can't let Jedi mind tricks questions go without a follow up. So what's one or two of those good questions that you're able to turn things around with?
I like to understand people. Again, because it's one of my strengths, I really like to understand the person in front of me. So I typically ask some personal questions, or I will use self-deprecating humor to break down the walls quite a bit. And I'll make fun of myself or something like that. And then I can gauge to see if that kind of loosens some of the tension in the room. It is understanding who's in front of you is super important. And you have to match the energy. If I am the sales rep asking the customer, I have some different questions I can ask them, I think, from a Jedi mind trick. And most of it's, if I can get to the personal level with them without being obnoxious or, you know, I have to be careful too on that part. I feel like that's my area of expertise. I like that part, just personally speaking. So I have a lot of energy around it. And so I'm able to really shift. If you don't have that energy or that's not comfortable for you, do not ask those questions because you're going to get super uncomfortable because you're thinking like, oh, okay, Patrick told me to ask personal questions, but that's not your jam. Don't ask it because you'll do that. And you'll be like, oh my God, I don't know what to say now. This is so uncomfortable. I'm sweating and I've got this nervous laugh now. And, you know, we've all tried that, right? We've all tried to be something we're not, as we said earlier, and we fail miserably. So yep. It's hard to give you the answer for the Jedi mind tricks. If I'm working with people, it's somewhat the same, but I really like to show and tell like, hey, I've noticed something about you, Ken, that you're really good at this, or you have a lot of, let's say you have a lot of books in your background. So obviously you're a voracious reader and you want people to know you like to read and that's really important for you. And so I'll ask something questions like, hey, I see all those books in your background. I'm thinking it's so great that you're reading. I mean, I may something like you have a favorite. Are they organized by whatever it is? And so obviously I'm not there to sell my product, right? I'm asking personal questions about you and kind of what's in your background. And so immediately you go like, ah. So the Jedi mind trick, I guess, and all that is get them talking about something they love or they like. Mm. And pretty soon you can start having some fun with them, thinking, but that's so great. And eventually they'll have to say, listen, Patrick, we could talk about me all day long. What are you here for? And you want to prevent that as much as you can. So you just have to time it just right and say, man, that's so great, Ken, but I really don't want to, you know, I'd love to come back and talk more about this because I really am interested in your books too. But what I'm here for is, you know, X, Y, and Z. And so you've kind of got them, I call it whipping them up into a foam where they're really excited. They have a lot of energy around that. And then boy, if they transfer the energy back to what you're selling or what your services is, it's so palpable versus trying to get them up to where you are on your services or your product. It could be like drudgery. So get them talking about something they really like, something they have a lot of energy around, and then you can talk about your products.
Gotcha.
How's that for Jedi? Is that?
Yeah, that'll work out. All right. I'm looking forward to going out and sell something. I'll go sell my neighbor a pen or something like that after the chat here.
Awesome. Make sure you ask him, does he want a pen though? Don't just go selling blind.
That is fair.
Yeah.
On your website, you highlighted the importance of your values and strengths. What are questions that can help you find some of those initially? I know you mentioned the strength finder, but being able to figure out what those are, to be able to actually concretely put them down and say, these are values and strengths.
Mm-hmm. Well, the value exercise is really important. So if you click on the link, it'll take you to an area that you can put in and look at your values. And those are important because as we change, let me put it a different way. I think as we get older, our values change. Obviously, I don't have the same values as I did in my 20s. And that's important. And it's like we talk about, I really want to be a tiger. But if I'm a llama and I'm really thinking my values are of a tiger, it's really important to like course correct. If you value freedom, altruism, financials, or whatever it is, you have to be pretty darn clear what your values are because you may be miserable and thinking like my work or my life or my relationships, whatever, they're just not working. It's time to go look at your values and see what are they and bring them up to date and then start matching them with what you're doing, your work, or your life, and not to get too far in that form, but that's super important to understand part of who you are. And remember, your values will change. So if you took that test or put it on paper today, maybe in a year, maybe things change for you significantly. You got a new job, or you got a new career, or you got a new spouse, or you moved, or things change. It'll change too. So it's cool. I come back to that several times and really updo mine. And I found it to be very insightful. Think, oh, okay. Especially being a solopreneur, especially doing the wine, I have different values now than I did before. And I'm learning myself. Holy cow. I coach myself after my sales calls with wine. I'm thinking like, I didn't realize I did that. Definitely for sure. Take the Strength Finders. There's a link on there. There's quite a few links that has helped me. I think exploring those, some people are uncomfortable with having a test and saying, that's not who I am. How dare they categorize me or pigeonhole me? And that's fine, dude. I mean, you know, I'm not here to, but I just said, those are helpful for me. It's helped me tremendously in my career and how I relate to people. I had an epiphany when I was leading people as a line manager, and I was coached in the beginning to be a certain way, because that's how my line manager was having me do things. And it really didn't sit well with me. I really didn't like it. I didn't like how it made me feel. I felt uncomfortable all the time. And then I was like, okay, this is not working, because it was against my values. It was against everything I stood for, but I was being told to do that. I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure your audience would be like, yeah, I can relate to that, because we've all had that. We've all had someone tell us we should be a certain way, or you got to fit into this box or you're out. It's important to understand when you want to make that break. And I did, because I thought, okay, that's not how I'm going to manage my team. I wanted to do it this way. And I basically told him, I said, this is what I'm going to do. The good news for me is it worked out, because I was pretty adamant with what I wanted to do. And I was also very successful, because I said, listen, watch me do this. And you can see where I was. And so I took a last place team into the top five of the country in 2 years, because I trusted myself, right? So first thing first, know your values, understand your strengths. And if you can do that, dude, you're far and away on your, I think it's so important that people find it. It's turned into a bit of my mission as I go on this path that I'm on, is to really turn people on to what they do really naturally well, and then really lean into that and then practice it. Practice those strengths and say, okay, I'm going to put myself in these positions. And it's life, whether it's personal, it's business, it's relationships. If you're playing darts on Friday night or something and you have a really good strength, lean into it with your mates and say, hey, I'm going to do this. Let them surround you with support and all that. And you'd be surprised. So many people I talk to about this, they're like, it's been life-changing. Strength Finders is one avenue. DISC can be another one. There's lots of different personality tests. If you find one that's better for you, terrific. All I care about is you find out who you are, what you're good at, and go forth and conquer.
You had mentioned that our values can fluctuate. I've gone through some upheaval in identities over the last few years, and it's been painful because in some cases, leaving community behind. And how should one think about embracing these fluctuations as we change? The easy one is to say as we get older, because it's just tied to time. But as things fluctuate, what are some ideas to make it easier for embracing, instead of finding that it's forced on us, if you will, because we're in this process of change? How can we make that a little bit easier, perhaps?
Yeah. Well, give yourself grace, first and foremost. Truly, we are so hard on ourselves as a general rule. I have found that most people who come to me, they're usually top performers, or they want to be performers, and they have high achievement in their DISC or their Strength Finders. They want to be number one. They want to overachieve, and they have so much stress and they have so much fear. So first things first, give you a big peanut butter smear of grace across your everything you do, because you're learning. And as we learn, we will falter and replace mistakes with a mistake. I always tell people that, rewrite that darn word. Even on my LinkedIn, I put on, it's impossible. Like, nope, it says in the word, if you break it apart, it says, I'm possible. You can put sticky notes on your mirror and actualizations and really get honest with yourself. If you're scared to go on your own because you really want the paycheck and you're not in a good financial system to do that, or from a family standpoint, or if you're the only breadwinner, but one of your values is freedom, that you don't want to be constrained by that. It's really important to reward yourself, or like I said, really look at that and say, hey, that is me. And someday I'm going to get there. But right now, here's the things I'm going to do, but here's the steps I'm going to take to get to my true value, because I really believe in that. And that's perfectly fine to have goals, looking at your values to say, I value this. I value altruism, but I'm not doing anything for the community. It's killing me, literally. Not to get too woo-woo, but I think that's a big part of some of the challenges we have physically, is that we're not aligning with who we really are, and we're fighting against it. So if you're having challenges in your life, or you're having major changes and you're using the value exercise, you can use it as a good tool to say, this is where I am today. My situation is not matching my values, and that's totally fine. Because you know what? This is the first step to understand, what the heck are my values? If you didn't know your whole life going through this, what your values were, and you looked at your end of your life thinking, man, I have a lot of regrets. I didn't do this and that. After today, it's on you, because now you know there's an opportunity to do that. I've had really many older clients who have said, I wish I would have known this earlier in my life. And I said, I totally agree. But now, so do it. You got the freedom to do it now. So I think the values can change, Ken, but also you can use the values to make sure that you're setting yourself up for what you really want in your life, because they may not be where you're at now. And I get that. Sometimes we're in a situation where we're like, this is not the time to cut bait and run because I don't like my situation. You may have responsibilities. You may have, whether it's financial or family or something, but you really want to do something else. Hope that helps.
It does. Look forward to diving into some of those value analysis as well. I've done several different kind of personality type things, and so I always do learn something. And now, just answer the question for who I am or what I'm trying to accomplish, rather than trying to outsmart it, because that's just not helpful in the end.
Yeah. Good for you. I've had that conversation with several people that they're trying to steer the tests to what either someone else wants them to be or what they think they want themselves to be. And I said, well, that's fine. Just realizing it won't be the epiphany that you're either A, paying me for, or B, what you really want. And if that's part of the game you're playing, great. But if you want to look in the mirror and really see if you're ready for it, now's the time. So let's do it. I'm right here. I'm your wing person.
Yeah. So how has that looked, as you described there, people who might be doing it, trying to match somebody else's expectation, whether that's parent or spouse or something like that? If you have that conversation and they're like, oh yeah, well, I did it this last time around. I was thinking a lot about what my dad always used to say or what he was thinking, and that I know that influenced me. Then I don't know, in this scenario, if somebody would go back and do it again after a conversation with you and, answer for who they are as honestly as they can. And then what does that conversation look like at that point? I'm thinking that could be really kind of earth shattering for someone kind of on the internal systems to go, I've been living with this or carrying this expectation for all this time. And this is a breaking point now. I'm choosing this as a breaking point to say, I am shifting. Seems to me that would be transformational at that point for folks.
Totally. It's wonderful. It's a celebratory experience. It's like, let's go pop some champagne, because it's so rewarding, and it's probably been exhausting. Most people I've talked to, it's exhausting for them to keep up this, I don't want to say charade, but there's a lot of inner workings going on with all this too. I know we're blurring the line of fails in interpersonal skills. You know, I'm also on a mission to talk about having a therapist. That is a really good thing. And I know from my own experience with them, it's been so helpful because they really are a guide. And I wish that if I could encourage parents overall is to really be a good role model for your kids, to think that therapy is really a good thing. And if I had them early on in my career, it's just a side person next to me, like my little support system, because there's so much stigmatism around therapy overall. Mm. And not to shanghai your podcast on this stuff, but it's important to know that there's really important things that go on internally when you're finding your true self. And it can be very shocking, as you said earlier, and you need that support system around you. So I really encourage people to start now getting a support system, whatever that looks like for you. And don't be afraid to reach out to a therapist. And it took me many times, I mean, probably 4 or 5 before I found one I really liked. And she understands from my personal background, what my family's gone through, what we do. And it's okay to have that first meeting and go, nope, didn't feel it. Keep going. You'll find it. You'll find the person. And when you find that person, you'll know it. You'll know me like thinking, yes, they totally get me. And yes, it does suck that you got to tell your story over and over and over again to get a good therapist. But dude, that's okay, because that's what they get paid to do. And don't feel guilty with saying no, because they don't want you to take them for guilt either. That's a whole other therapy thing. They want to be successful, so they're trying their best to make a connection for you too. So my thinking has always been, have a good support system around you, some people who really get you. Because when you have the courage to look at yourself and think, hey, this is who I really am, these are the things I really want, I've done a lot of the exercises, and I really want a different career, or I want to do better in my career, whatever the case is. It's so revealing to feel like, this is so much fun, because we don't play as an adult as much as we probably could. We need to do that better, I think. So having support system around you is critical, and whatever that looks like for you is great. I'm a big proponent of having a great therapist and using them to guide you and really have really good, honest conversations, because that's what they get paid to do, right? So you could really tell them lots of stuff that you would not normally tell people because you're so freaking scared of telling someone that. But if they're really good and you have a really good connection, they will support the heck out of you. And if they don't, push the eject button and go get another one and go ask another one, because it's critical to have that support.
Amen and amen. Yeah, I would submit that a physical therapist and a mental therapist, right, or companions that we need on this thing we call life, because the body needs it, the brain needs it, and or the personality, whoever we want to categorize and saying on the brain side anyway, or the therapist.
I love the physicality portion of your body, like a trainer. That's great. It's great. I love the fact that you say that.
Yeah. I really appreciate Dr. Kelly Starrett and the Ready State, where talks about going into the pain cave and working on the muscles. Because if you take care of those things when they're smaller, then they don't grow into the big problems. And same kind of thing with a therapist. If you've got somebody that can walk you through these things when they're small before they get to the big things, then it's just healthier. You're better off just because now you can get them early on.
Yeah. But you have to experience it, because people won't believe you. Because they're thinking like, because it's just so much stigmatism around it. I've talked to lots of people about it. And as I said, I'm a big, big fan of it. Kind of like you talked about, what's the misconception of salespeople? They're all sleazy and all the things we hear about them. And I joked with another podcast I was on. I said, well, maybe you should have other people from professions. So just ask them, have an attorney on or a lawyer on and say, what do people mostly think about attorneys, and pick a profession. We all have different things about them. And I think the therapy is just another, unfortunately, one people are missing out on. Such good emotional work. It's been so much fun for me and my family, everyone's using them. So.
Excellent. Like raising my kids, pretty much all of their life, I told them they're going to spend time on a therapist's couch as a result of having me as a parent. because I know that I wasn't perfect. So let's just start at the jump and let's go ahead and talk about, let's set that expectation out there that welcome to the human condition. And I know I wasn't perfect. I love them and tried to do my best, but I failed in some areas, no doubt. And I want them to have the freedom to be able to recognize that and voice that.
That's awesome. Great for you, Ken. I love it. That's so great. The kids don't get that, I'm sure. They must have been like, who are you? You know, but maybe you've told them enough. They go, oh, yeah, it's just dad. He's saying that. But it's terrific. I love it. You know, I always tell people, maybe you should set aside some money in a college fund. Yes. And then you should probably put some money in a therapist fund because they're going to need it.
Yeah. Yeah. Just by virtue of living life.
Totally. It's, yeah. Nothing to do with
not super easy, right? Regardless of the background or whatever it is, you're going to have stuff happen. And to be able to work through it, it's hard to do on your own.
Yeah. Totally agree.
Cool. Let's see. What is the center of the Venn diagram of questions and dogs or pets? And questions and wine. I know that you appreciate pets and I know you appreciate wine. So yeah. Wanted to see if there was any overlap for questions and animals and on any particular angle that you're looking at. And then on the wine front.
It's a very interesting question. Well, both of them have lots. There's a lot of energy around both of those. If you're a pet owner, pet parent, and dogs specifically, you can walk into a room and yeah, there's such a good, there's a great distraction first and foremost, but everyone who loves a dog. And so it's immediate connection with that. Like, oh, my dog is this. And so we talk about our dogs. I mean, my God, even at our family dinner table, we talk about all the animals and some of the idiosyncrasies. It's a big part of our conversation as a family, right? So when you're out and about and talking to the people, it's so much fun because they have so many different things that they do. They bring us so much joy. They're just terrific. I think the same could be said about wine is when I tell people what I have another business and this is what I do and what I make. And they're like, oh my gosh, that's great. And so there's a lot of energy around that. Sometimes they can both be distracting. So I would push a word of caution. That I've gone into this before where we're talking about sales or coaching, and then they look on my Instagram and or my LinkedIn and they go, oh, I see you're a winemaker and you own a winery and let's talk about that. And I'm thinking like, oh, dude, no, we're here to talk about something else. But you kind of roll with it. So I think dogs and wine can sometimes have that effect, which is totally fine because I have to, again, like I said, practice what I preach and I just roll with it. That's fine because I think a lot of people are very curious about wine. What's it like? The same thing. They assume a lot of things that are mostly incorrect. And that's cool because a lot of us are not from the area. But as soon as you start doing it, it's like any profession, you're realizing, oh, so that's what's really going on. So there's the apex really is usually those both of our really good passions around those, or people have lots of energy around those subjects. So from there, you can really personalize it because now you're an identity like, oh, Patrick loves dogs or loves animals, or Patrick likes wine. So all of a sudden they put me in a spot or a place. They think, oh, cool. I can always come to him or people look me up and then I get messages for the wine stuff and like, hey, where can we come visit? Where can we find your wine? You know, all that stuff, which is terrific because that's a brand as well. I'm a sales coach and I'm also a winemaker, winery owner. So those are two big brands. I'm trying to grow them both. So I really enjoy both conversations.
As we move towards wrapping up, I like to ask folks what their right now question is. So this is something beyond what's for dinner. And am I going to get married or who am I going to get married? But it's more about coming back to that present moment and asking, what are the questions that you are working through or living with right now that are a part of your life?
Yeah. Well, because I have two businesses, they are different. And they're all wrapped around the, you know, that some of the genesis of fear is like, is this going to work? Is this going to, how's this going to go? And as a family, we talk about this quite a bit. It's like, hey, what are we doing? How are we going to get there? And there's certain benchmarks with, I guess, both careers or both job or both businesses where I'm looking to grow, where I wanted them to be. I have my, in my mind's eye, I talk about this quite a bit, is I can see where I want to be. So I really focus on that significantly, where I have lots of energy around it, because it is difficult to keep it going. As with everything in life, is we get dissuaded and feel like, oh, it's just the right path I'm on. So to be honest with you, Ken, I think that's the biggest one is, how's this going to go for the year? This is a big year turning point for the wine, because we started off in July of last year with a single varietal. And now this year we're launching, should be the end of this month, we are bottling three more varietals. So now we're going to have more of an offering. We have some things we want to do from a marketing standpoint, but it's a triple the inventory, right? And so with an inventory business, I have to be smart about how that's going to go and what that means. And so we really have to be careful, spend my time wisely and spend my money wisely. There's a lot of headwinds in the alcohol industry overall, which you can read about in the news. So there's lots of fear. And I was telling another friend of mine, I'm thinking like, oh my God, there's so many headwinds going on right now. He goes, yeah, Patrick, but he said, think about it. If you can survive this one, then you can survive lots of them, because this is pretty bad. And I was like, yeah, man, that's taking it from a positive angle. I guess so. Yeah. So those are, I guess, in my brain, just kind of riffing with what's questions for me.
Lovely. Thank you for sharing. And certainly hope things go well for you in this next season, literally with the harvest. Being in the DC area near Northern Virginia, it's our local wine country. And as I've seen different vineyards pop up and start to grow, I'm like, yeah, there's a serious investment going on. It's happening there. And lots of variables that are not necessarily within your control.
Yeah, that's the scary part. And it's also the super creative part, because every year is a new year from a vineyard standpoint, and how the grapes are going to grow and all the different factors involved. There's so many variables going on to making of the grapes, and then also the making of the wine. And so different things that we're doing differently this year than we did last year with the wine. I'm really curious to see how that comes out. And it's so much fun. I love it. At the same time, it scares the hell out of me. So much like the sales, I just love this conversation with the questions and really helping people find their path. But at the same time, being a solopreneur, it's just me. I've been in corporate America for 30 years, and now it's on me. Talk about a learning curve. It's been significant. Holy smokes. I often want to say like, okay, I get it. No more universe. And then they go, yeah, that's funny, Patrick, because we have lots more we're going to give you, because we know you can handle it. Right. I'm thinking like, oh gosh. Okay. Here we go.
Indeed. Going to do hard. Well, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yes.
Let's see. Any other thoughts or encouragements about questions that you brought in thinking that we may be able to touch on that we hadn't yet explored?
If you're leading people and you're wondering like, how can this relate to the personnel that you have on your team? It's very important to understand the people on your team, what their strengths are. And again, if you feel comfortable as a leader, having them do some of the testing and then share that with them, it's just such a kumbaya moment. I'm telling you, you'll love it if you're open to it and if your team is open to it. And I've had so much fun with it. And I encourage people now. I worked with a young startup and they had some challenging founders, and they weren't communicating very well. And they were really struggling with the style of communication. And I said, have you guys sat down and talked about how you like to be communicated to? Was it email, text, you know, all that kind of stuff? And like, no. So I worked with them for quite some time. And it was really interesting because they all were so different with how they liked the messaging. And it was just on communication. That's all we focused on for this particular example. And so I would say for those that are in this position, if you're a founder or a startup, and for one, you may have the greatest knowledge about your product, but you don't really like sales. There's obviously things you can do to help with that. I can certainly help there. But I think if you're growing your team, if you're managing a team of people to really understand what their strengths are, and so the questions you ask them are really important, because you have to remember like who's in front of you. And the reason why I say that is because being a single contributor or someone managing me, it was always frustrating when my boss didn't understand me. Like, no, I don't like that. I like this. And there was this constant conflict of, well, that's not how they liked it. So, and it's definitely a mismatch. And so most of us got tired of that and left, or the thinking like, you know, my boss didn't really understand that. And so if you have the opportunity as a leader to do that, if you're on a team that this is happening to, be brave and raise your hand and say, I think we should think about something like this for our team to go through, and pose it back up to your line manager and see what they do. Because if you don't, at least you've tried, and you're trying to make it better for everybody. And I've seen that work many times where people are like, wow, thank God I asked, because they're open to it. And they didn't think that it was the right thing to do, but we said it's the right thing to do. Thinking like, oh my God, this whole time we were thinking we shouldn't do it. And then they did it. And it was terrific. So don't give up.
Be brave and don't give up. Love it.
Yeah.
Where's the best place for folks to engage with you and learn more about what you're excited about?
All right. Go to salesgrowthtoday.com. That's the sales. You can also go to LinkedIn. You can find me there. You can see all the things I've done. I do have a newsletter, post on LinkedIn quite a bit about sales, some tips and tricks. There's lots of things that I try to give back to the community from that standpoint. You'll find the link to the website for the wine if you're so curious about that. So that's stellarridgevineyard.com. It's kind of fun. You can see what we're all about, what we're doing that's a little bit different and unique in the wine world. Those are three best places. So either website, or just go to LinkedIn, type in my name, you'll see me, and then you can kind of cruise through all my contact information, what I've done, where I've been. And then that's what I do. When I meet people, I just look at their LinkedIn. Most of us have a business profile. And then if we have other personal things, that's usually under contact. And that's what I do. And I just message people around. I go, hey, this is cool. Love that. Let's connect. So anytime your listeners want to connect with me, love to have a conversation. I do a complimentary phone call just to see if we're a good match, to see what your challenges are and see how I can help. And I love it. I love meeting all kinds of people, dude. It's been great. So much fun.
Cool. Sounds like a plan. And I will include all the resources we talked about and all Patrick's contact information in the show notes as always. Patrick, thank you for sharing. Thank you for helping weave together wine, sales, love of animals throughout this conversation, and understanding how questions have played such a role in your life. So thank you for being a part of the Curated Questions family. And thank you for being here.
Thank you, Ken. I had a great time. Thank you so much for having me.
Ken here. I learned several insights from this wide-ranging conversation with Patrick. I pulled the following three takeaways from my notes, and I'd love to hear what resonated most with you. Number one, questions as relationship currency. Genuine curiosity trumps sales technique. Patrick emphasizes that authentic questions rooted in real curiosity create stronger connections than manipulative, loaded questions. He advocates for becoming genuinely curious about the person and their business challenges, rather than just pushing through a sales agenda. This approach builds trust and would differentiate you from others, limiting the relationships to transactional. Question: how might using genuine curiosity enhance the relationships in your circle? Number two, the power of self-discovery through questioning. Know yourself before you can effectively question others. Patrick strongly believes that understanding your own strengths and values is foundational before you can effectively engage others through questions. He recommends tools like StrengthFinder to discover your natural abilities, arguing that when you're confident in who you are, you can ask better questions and connect more authentically. This self-awareness prevents you from trying to be someone you're not during conversations. Question: what benefits would you expect to receive as a result of pursuing self-discovery? Number 3, authentic self-alignment as the foundation of success. Stop trying to be someone else and embrace your natural strengths. Patrick argues that the most significant breakthrough comes when people stop fighting against their natural abilities and instead lean in to what they do well. He describes the transformative moment when clients discover and accept their true strengths, leading to increased confidence and effectiveness in all areas of life. This self-acceptance provides the freedom to love what you're naturally good at, rather than constantly struggling to fit into someone else's mold or expectations. Question: what expectations from others have you adopted that are now time to drop? That's it. And to those on the other side of the speakers, thank you for being here. Gratitude shout out to Beauty Pill for the show's music and producer Ben Ford for the technical help. This episode was recorded on Piscataway land. Please engage with this episode in some manner. Download, follow, save, like, share, or comment about something that resonated. This action ensures we are engaging the questioning community. Until next time, keep questioning.